Broadcasting from Manhattan Beach and the World Wide Web, you're listening to CHSR, HealthyLife.net.
As a service to our listeners, this program is for general information and entertainment purposes only. CHSR HealthyLife.net does not recommend, endorse, or object to the views, products, or topics expressed or discussed by show hosts or their guests. We suggest you always consult with your own personal, medical, financial, or legal advisor.
Welcome. You're listening to Way of the Dreamer with Robert Mouse. This is the show where we affirm the fun, the excitement, the guidance of our dreams and of synchronicity and of the power of imagination. A wonderful guest today, his name is Travis Wernett. I was going to call him a California dreamer, but recently he's moved, I gather, his life, his rabbit farm, his cats, his partner, his dreaming self out to Colorado. Before I bring Travis in, let me just say he's a wonderful dream worker. He's a great musician. He cares about dreams, folklore, music, dreaming with the earth, all that good stuff. Let me give you a taste of why I invited him to join the show. I opened his book, The Dreaming Well, at random today, having read most of it before, and I found myself in a moment that gave me a breath of my native Australia, but something else. So Travis, in his book, describes how he's in a park in a wilderness preserve at Big Sur, California, an area I know very well from all my years of teaching at Esalen and walking in those redwood forests. But Travis, in his account, is not so much among the redwoods but among the eucalyptus trees, which, of course, are immigrants brought from my native Australia. There he is with the immigrants, and since he likes the didgeridoo, the famous Aboriginal wind instrument, he's got his didj, and he's playing his didj, and he's conscious that he's celebrating the trees and his connection to the land. And as he writes about it, a nuthatch, you know, a nuthatch, the little bird, big head, big chest, strong beak, taps into the tree, into the places in the tree where it's sometimes hidden its food, hence its name, nuthatch. A little nuthatch is on his didgeridoo, and it stays with him till he finishes playing. And in this lovely, luminous moment, there's an example of what Travis in his book, The Dreaming World, calls the courtship of nature, giving back to nature through our creative gifts, what nature gives to us. So thank you for that, Travis, and because of that, I'm going to welcome you to the show with a sound that you may or may not recognize. You've been to Australia, you know about Aboriginal traditions. I don't play the didj, but I can manage to play the clapstick. So I'm clapping you in with Mulga wood clapsticks from the native people of my native country. Welcome.
Thank you so much, Robert. It's beautiful to be together with you today.
Yes, you know, what I like about you is your sheer passion and love of dreaming and music and all of that, and your book reflects that, and your ability to amplify dreams, as Jung liked to do, and our friend Jeremy Taylor did quite often, by taking us into realms of folklore and myths that are evoked by the dream, helping us to understand in the weave of these things that, as Joseph Campbell said, the dream is the personal myth and the myth is the collective dream. So I want to ask you a few things based on my recent reading of your book. It took me a couple of years to catch up, but sometimes I can be slow. I want to go to a very personal area, and I hope you're willing to talk about it. I want to go to your relations with your father before and after his death. Are you willing to talk about that?
Yes, yes, more than happy to do so.
I was greatly moved by this because you talk about a big dream, I think it was the night before your father died, in which you and your sister are facing a big wave, and you know that something big is coming, and your father doesn't get out of bed that morning, as I recall it, and you tell your sister over coffee in the morning, something big is coming, we'd better be ready. Tell us a little bit about that experience.
Well, that happened at a time in my life when I was simply paying attention to my dreams. I had learned that dreams were important, and at that time I really wasn't working with anybody else. I was recording my own dreams in my journal, and it was a moment in which I understood that something larger was trying to get through and speak to me. And that dream was a very helpful and powerful sort of presage to my father's leave-taking. The fact that I remembered the dream and I didn't know exactly what was coming, but I mentioned it to my sister that morning, helped both of us prepare for his passage, which took place about an hour later. And it was quite incredible because the hospice worker also called that morning, and she hadn't been by to visit for some time, and something was sort of pulling at her coat sleeves that morning as well. So she stopped by, and she spent a little bit of time with him and came out and told us that it was her opinion that he was starting to make his way.
It's a beautiful experience, and it's an educational one and a confirming one for many people who want to understand how dreams prepare us for big life events, events in the family, events in our own lives, and how sometimes the messages are couched in symbolic language. Your dream of a big wave, knowing something big is rolling in, is an example, perhaps, of a kind of symbolism in dreams that many will recognize. And you say, following that in your book, Travis, that since his death, your father's appeared to you. You felt his presence, presumably in dreams and other ways, many times. Can you talk about that?
Sure. I think two of the most powerful ways that my dad has visited me, and he's shown me that our dead are not gone. Our dead are simply dead, and that they're no longer in their bodies. At specific junctures in my life when I needed some guidance, my father has appeared to me. For instance, once he came in a dream with his own father, my grandpa, and they simply appeared to me in a garage. And I felt at the time that they were trying to tell me that there was some stored up energy that I had put into the garage that needed to come out. And that was very helpful to me at a time in my life when I was probably a little bit too pulled back and withdrawn. And so he does that from time to time, and he also appears to me synchronistically in waking life. I feel just prior to moving to Colorado, which is where he lived his entire life, my partner and I have just moved here, and it's been this enormous undertaking. As we were trying to make the decision as to whether or not we wanted to leave Northern California and come to Colorado, I was driving into my counseling job one night for a graveyard shift, and I thought to myself, in my mind, is this the right thing to do? I don't know. I can't tell. I have no way of making this decision all by myself. And at that very moment, on my right, as I'm driving down the road, an owl came out of a tree and flew directly across the road and in front of my windshield, evincing the presence. I felt that this was the voice of my father saying, go for it, kid. It's going to be just fine.
Very moving. I'm asking about this because it is a watershed in the lives of many people, especially by my observation, men who might have been closed to this until the experience takes place. You weren't closed, you were open, you had the dream, you were working the dreams your own way all along. So was I, but my father's death and what surrounded it and what followed it was a huge watershed in my life. But I've noticed in the lives of people who may not be open to dreaming, a passing of that kind and the contact that may follow is a game changer, it's a life changer. After my father died, and we'd become friends and become close for a few years before his death, which I was grateful we hadn't been close for a long time, he came back as family counselor again and again and again. He gave specific information for my mother, living on the other side of the ocean in Australia, while I was living on the east coast of the United States, that I was able to relate to her. He gave a message to one of my daughters who had never met him, who needed to hear from him. And our relationship went on for a long time, and there were events in regular life, well, ordinary life, so-called, where we felt his presence. I mean, I remember meeting with my mother where things were not going well. We felt his presence as if he came behind her, propelled her out onto the balcony where we had been talking and put us together in the most loving way. Then he went on to do other things. I mean, I'm older than you, Travis. My father died 30 years ago, 31 years ago now, actually, in my native Australia. But I want to tell you a brief story from my life about relations with a departed family member. My father came back. I was surprised because I know he's been doing other things, made other choices. He came back 2 years ago. It was like this. I'm in that drifty state between sleep and awake, which you know, and you refer to it in your book. The hypnagogic state is the $5 word for it. You're not asleep. You're not awake. Things are going on in your mind. You might be entering a lucid dream. And in that state, in the early morning, I found myself up on a high rooftop, a locale I love, because I often find that up there I can get a perspective on things that I lose down in the hubbub and the confusion of ordinary life. And there's someone on the rooftop, and I look, and it's my father. I mean, looking really good, looking 30 years old. And then we're right next to each other, and he points at my upper lip, and he says, go to a doctor and get that checked out. So I do, Travis. I call the dermatologist the next day. It's basal skin carcinoma, kind of thing that is easily dealt with if caught and taken to the doctor. But because I don't hang out with doctors very much, I needed someone, in this case my dad, to come and tell me to do something about it. Now, you could psychologize this and say, okay, this is a part of yourself that knows better than you do, that's putting on a familiar face, or you could say it's the personification of a disease mark or something like that. I happen to believe that was my dad, traveling a very long way because he'd made life choices to say something to his boy about what his boy needed to hear, playing counselor or family angel. So I have no theology about these things, Travis, but I know as a dreamer who spent a lot of time amongst the so-called dead in my dreams all my life, I know that for me, dreams are first-hand confirmation that the soul consciousness has an afterlife, and that we are capable of having healing and helpful communication with our deceased. Do you feel the same way?
I most certainly do, yes. And I think that highlighting the way that people come to us in our dreams after they die, to me it's one of the most immediate forms of having contact, because we're surrendered, we're asleep, and the usual filters that we might have up that would prevent us from, let's say, believing that such a thing were possible, are usually or can be removed. And so I think it's really important and helpful and useful to work with the dreams as a way of showing and evincing that the dead really are the dead, and they really are visiting us, and that they have that capacity.
The dead really are the dead, and the dead really are alive at the same time, right?
I just
want to hear you amplify that first statement. You mean they really are themselves. They really are the people we think they are, and they're alive somewhere else. I think this is one of the great discoveries in dreams of the dead, as we call them. There's something characteristic of almost all dreams in this category that I've ever heard, which is the dead are alive, right? And when the dead show up in our dreams, they are alive. If we wake up to what that means, we're learning that soul consciousness has a life beyond this life. And once you know that through as direct information as something you can trust through first-hand experience, I think it changes your views about everything. And I think when we look at the history of our kind on the planet, it's probably fair to say that the number one reason why humans have tended to believe across all the millennia that there is something that survives death is they've had this kind of experience. They've met the deceased. They've come visiting, and we find ourselves in their realm as we travel in dreams. So let's look at all the things that we might talk about based on your book, based on your practice. Let's go to the music. I'm not a musician. I like music. I use the drumming a lot. You don't refer to drumming very much in your book. But before we get to all the forms of sound, sonic healing, and musical assistance to what I would call conscious dreaming or lucid dreaming, let's talk about your relationship with the Australian instrument, the didgeridoo. I mean, I'm an absentee Australian, as you know. I left my native country at 22. I've been back a few times. I've had some big experiences, including with native people, but I do not play the didge. So talk about your relationship with the didgeridoo to start off with, Travis.
Sure. Well, this is a long-standing relationship. When I first left Colorado in my early 20s, I came into contact with the didgeridoo in California, and immediately I knew that I wanted to play the instrument. And after I started playing, I also had a memory that I couldn't quite place whether or not this had actually happened in waking life or whether it was a dream. But I do remember being a child and hearing the didgeridoo and hearing an Aboriginal player playing the didgeridoo on the street mall in Boulder, Colorado. And I remember just falling into the music. And I remember my mother coming back and finding me and saying, oh, God, there you are. I thought I lost you. You know, where have you been? What have you been doing? And it was kind of one of those timeless experiences where I had no real sense of how much time had passed myself. I was just mesmerized by this instrument and this sound. And so in my 20s, I came into contact with the instrument, and I just knew that I wanted to play it. So I just started playing all the time. And initially, I was very kind of embarrassed to play in front of other people. So I would go out to the cliffs, the old cliff house near San Francisco.
Oh, yes, I know it well.
Decimated.
I used to go there to celebrate good radio shows on the local public radio station in San Francisco.
Yeah, well, I used to go out there after work in the nighttime at dark, and I would just sit on the cliffs and play, and I sort of taught myself how to play the instrument in that way, and it allowed me to, the feeling of being next to the ocean and being in nature just really helped me sort of loosen up to the instrument, and I think looking back, that's what the instrument asked of me, and it was something, a gift that it gave me, and then of course, I'm not at all surprised that you started the show with the story that you did, because when I was sort of feeling into what we might talk about during our time together, that was one of the stories that sort of popped out and wanted to raise its wily head in our discussion. So thank you for beginning with that. I played for a while professionally in my 30s. And I became interested in primarily doing music. And then towards the end of my 30s, I backed off from that. I did make a trip to Australia, and I was there for, I want to say, 5 weeks. And I did spend some time in Arnhem Land up in the far north.
Yes.
The northeast. And I was taken out into the bush with a group of women. The men had all left. They had to leave the minute that I arrived in order to do funeral ceremonies on Elko Island. And I was, of course, I was hoping to spend some time with Jalu, who is kind of like the Jimi Hendrix of didgeridoo in Arnhem Land.
Yes.
But he's also a bit of an elder. And so I didn't get to spend any time with the men, but the women did take me out into the bush to hunt my own instrument. And we had a great time. I was sweating profusely, and these older, Jennifer was the woman who was leading me through the bush, and she was probably in her early 60s and chain smoking, and she was always like 15 steps ahead of me, even though I was a young pup, you know, and I was sort of made her assistant for the day. And that was really important to me, to spend some time on the soil where the instrument originated from. And I didn't have anything that stood out as a spectacular, really apparent experience that sort of slapped me in the face. But just spending time there was really, really valuable to me. And I was really grateful to be able to do that and to find out about the origins of the instrument in the bush itself.
Well, I'm very interested to hear about this. Were these the people called the Yolngu people up there in Arnhem Land,
yes,
if you remember?
Of course,
indigenous names are typically translated simply the people. That's what Yolngu means. But
right.
Well, we find them tongue twisters, but their names for themselves typically mean simply the people. I've read about them. I haven't met them directly, as you have. So did you find a eucalyptus tree for didgeridoo, or eucalyptus branch that time, or did you already have one, or did you get it somewhere else?
Well, that... No, we did. We went through the bush. We drove out there in the Land Rover, and they asked me to drive. That was one of the comical aspects of the experience. They asked me if I wanted to go out and hunt an instrument, and I said yes. And then they said, okay, good, meet us in the morning. Come back. So I showed up, and sadly, they were having a funeral ceremony that very morning for somebody who had died the night before. And my Western sort of mind, I thought, oh, gosh, you know, I should probably leave off because this is a private thing, and I asked them, and they said, no, don't be silly. You stay. We're going to go and get some didgeridoo. So they took me in their Land Rover, and I drove, and we went to their ancestral forest, and all of the women sort of fanned out, and basically we had all the tools that we needed, and as I say, Jennifer put me to work, and she was walking around knocking on the eucalyptus trees to find out which one might be appropriate for an instrument. So every time she would find the tree that she wanted to harvest, she would put me to work cutting it down. So we brought back something like, I would guess, maybe 12 instruments, and one of those instruments became my own instrument that they helped me to fashion. And I was
so she's knocking to see whether the ukulele is hollow because it's been hollowed out by termites. Is that what's going
exactly.
on?
Exactly. Exactly. Yep. That would be
such a vivid picture, Travis. I'm loving you talking about this. So then now you have a didgeridoo hollowed out by termites. You went hunting the instrument, driving the Aboriginal women into the sacred forest. This is so great. And just tell me, how does it play? Because everyone must be different, right? Everyone else must be unique. Because whatever the termites have done inside the hollow tree or the hollow branch, I mean, it's going to be different from any other dig, isn't it? It makes
exactly.
a different sound in some way.
Yes, each instrument has its own voice. And as I talk about in the book, excuse me, even the voice of the termites becomes a part of the music. And it's as if the ancestral energy of the termites has been woven into the instrument. So we were saying at the beginning of the show the way in which the dead are alive. Part of the voice of the instrument of the didgeridoo is that action and that energy of the termites hollowing the instrument out. So their voice is present as well.
Wow. So we must never underrate the termites. I don't know very much about this, except through you and what I've read, but I know how important termite dust is in the divination of West Africa, so you're making me think that there's something more going on with the termites than most of us understand. We're talking to Travis Wernette. His book is The Dreaming Well. I must say, his Well of Dreaming takes us to oceans of the collective unconscious of mythology and so on. Travis, what is your website? Do you have a website, right? What is it?
Yes, I do. It's just exactly like the title of the book, thedreamingwell.com.
Okay, we need to pause for a break. This is Where the Dream with Robert Moss. We'll be back to continue this fascinating conversation very soon.
Where can you find out about dreams and the dream world? MossDreams.com. At MossDreams.com, you can find out about Robert Moss, his work, and discover the way of the dreamer. Read numerous articles and essays on almost every facet of dreams. Find out Robert's class and workshop schedule. Read reviews and so much more. Visit MossDreams.com to find your way of the dreamer. That's MossDreams.com.
Robert Moss has a deep engagement with the dream world, and now you can take a crash course from this master of active dreaming at your own pace. That's right. You can get Robert's 8 exciting half-hour programs on a new DVD set called Way of the Dreamer. Share Robert's story as a dreamer and dream healer. This dynamic 3-DVD set can help teach you how to find your way through your dreams to realize your full potential. Don't wait to learn the practical dreamwork techniques that can help you understand how to attain better health, emotional stability, spiritual awareness, and more. Order Way of the Dreamer DVDs today from Amazon.com or MossDreams.com. That's MossDreams.com.
We're HealthyLife.net, reaching and helping a worldwide audience without hype, without shock, and without shenanigans.
You're listening to Way of the Dream with Robert Moss. Our wonderful guest today is musician and dream worker Travis Wernette. His book is The Dreaming Well. I recommend it highly. I like his passion. Dreams, folklore, mythology, music, and dreaming with the earth. Travis, you say early in your book that we dream with the plants. I'm quoting, I'm paraphrasing. We dream with the plants, we dream with the trees, we dream with the earth. I'm so with you on this. We do it in our sleep and we do it in waking life if our senses are open. So talk to us a little bit more about your sense of sacred connection with the earth around you, and maybe even a little bit about your recent move, because you've come from Northern California recently to Colorado, which was your father's state. estate, you told us, and I gather where you spent some of your early life. How does the land affect you in terms of dreaming, in terms of music, in terms of creativity? Because you've moved from, as I understand it, in one very distinct environment to another. So what is it now for you to be dreaming in Colorado? What was it for you to be dreaming in Northern California?
Yeah, this is very much a central part of my experience at the moment. Now, we're living in high desert, so we're at high altitude in western Colorado. So it's very dry, it's very hot, and we've been here for 3 weeks just. And we've already had 60-mile-per-hour winds tear down our rabbit structure. We've already had lightning storms pass over the top of the house, and lightning has been striking the prairie dog pasture out in front of the front porch, and so on and so forth. So this is a much more, I would say, extreme environment, and the sense of what I would call the wild, the boundary between the human and the not-so-human, is very vivid here, and it's in my face. It's in people's faces every minute of every day, I would say, in this environment. So this is much different than, say, Northern California, where I was living in the forest, where I was living when I wrote The Dreaming Well, and what happened for me was I started living in the forest in my mid to late 30s, and I just hit that pause moment, the dark wood moment that some of us refer to as midlife or the middle passage, and I just
heard of it.
Yes, I know you have. I would say I had a moment very similar to what I remember you recounting in your books about when you were a writer, and then you sort of hit a juncture and devoted yourself to working with dreams and had a very clear choice. And I remember the dream that you shared around that. I believe it involved opening various doors and making a choice around what to do next. I had a very similar experience in Occidental California. And what happened for me was I started to have the sensation that my willpower was a lesser than kind of quantity. And I felt very much like the spirit of the woods, the dream of this place, was beginning to assert itself into my consciousness and my awareness and beginning to ask me for things and to ask me to do and to be a certain way. And so that was kind of a beginning, a re-beginning of a dedication to what I call in the book great nature, or the grand design. And so this kind of awareness and this kind of dedication and devotion began in Occidental as I was also working deeply with my dreams, which incidentally was the time during which I began to enjoy your books and your writing and found a lot of aid and assistance and instruction there. So now the project has moved to Colorado, and the rabbit farm is here, and essentially our entire way of life at the moment is organized around bowing our head and bending a knee to the great forces of nature which surround us. And we can almost do nothing but. We're living in a tent at the moment, and we're going to be setting up a geodesic dome to winter through. And, of course, as I say, we have our little rabbit farm. So this is an effort to live what I write about in The Dreaming Well, and also to recognize that even daily life can be understood as a kind of dreaming, and to honor the events that take place, and to ask the surrounding world. Something I've learned in working with my dreams is to ask, what are other forces, what are other people, what are the plants, what are the animals, what are the elements asking for of me? What are they asking of me, and how can I be of service?
Yes, you ask in your book, I flagged this statement. You said, what are their stories, meaning the stories of the land, the stories of the animals, the stories of the mountains. You're bringing it vividly into your world, into your landscape, Travis. But some people listening to us are now jumping up and down like Easter bunnies, wanting to know about the rabbit farm. Tell us what's going on with the rabbit farm.
Yeah, that happens with the rabbit farm. Well, essentially, this was another way in which my partner and I were chosen or claimed by something that I would say is greater than the two of us combined together. We've been farming rabbits for about 9 years, and we have heritage breeds, which is a way of saying that all of the rabbits that we have been tended and cared for since the late 1800s. And part of the effort of continuing these lines of animals is an effort towards doing something that doesn't feed into the kind of production line industrial consumeristic complex. And so keeping these lines of animals going is a matter of some small form of tradition and some small form of a practice to do something different. And it's our feeling that it's very important to know what goes into growing food, especially at this time when food itself, I would say, is at the very least threatened on a variety of levels, but to know what goes into growing food and to know what goes into caring for that which sustains us has been a big part of the project of raising the animals. And we also do, when we can, some vegetable farming. And
Your rabbits are going to become food. Is that what goes on?
Some of them, yes. Some of them. Not all. Yeah.
Some are going to become magician magic tricks, maybe.
Most certainly. The name of our little farm is Trickster Hare's Farm. And,
there you are.
There's a reason for that. Right now we have one rabbit.
I have to tell you a story about synchronicity and bunnies. You ready to hear it?
Please. Oh, I'd love to.
So I was once leading my dream teacher training. I think you did a level of that once upon a time. I was leading it on the Connecticut shore, a beautiful place, and I had completely forgotten, because I'm so engaged with my student teachers, that I'm supposed to do an interview with a California magazine, which my publishers think is important. So I'm 1 hour late in calling the magazine, and they're not happy. The editor wants to cancel the interview. You're too late, Robert. And I'm looking from my balcony at three little bunnies on the grass below me. And she's saying, but wait a minute, I'm curious about the synchronicity stuff. You keep saying we can get messages from synchronicity. What's going on there? And as I'm talking to her, I'm watching a red-tailed hawk dropping in vertical descent, talons outstretched, and I watch it grab a bunny and go up into the sky with its dinner in its talons. I'm thinking, maybe I could tell her that I've just seen what is a very good sign for me, because I identify the red-tailed hawk, and a hawk in good shape is a nice omen to me. I'm thinking, no, wait a minute, she's a Californian, she's probably a vegan, she's going to think I'm a savage if I'm celebrating the capture of a bunny by a hawk, so I don't tell her that story, but I take it as a good sign. I tell her another story about a black dog in synchronicity, and I hear a dog barking behind her at her end of the line. Just, Robert, that's incredible. What? I'm dog-sitting a black dog in my apartment for the first time in my life. You're telling me a story about a black dog, so the interview is on. So we do the interview.
Yeah.
It's great. And, Travis, I knew it would be great because I saw the hawk capturing the bunny, but I didn't tell
her. That's fantastic.
I had to tell you that. So, isn't it? I mean, noticing what the world is saying to us in what pops up all around us. It's a personal relationship, and you clearly have that. You had it with the eucalyptus trees. You have in other ways. When we come back after the break, I'm going to ask you if you have a dream report or something like that you'd like to share with me. And I'd like to play with it, you know, the way that I play with dreams, and then maybe in the third segment I can give you a little dream report and you can play with it the way that you like to play with dreams. How would that work?
That's fantastic. I look forward to it.
So let's give a taste of the work, the dream play, which Travis and I both love, because this isn't a spectator sport. We want not only become more active and more powerful dreamers, more creative dreamers, we want to know how to share our stories in ways that juice and vitalize relationships and bring energy up and into life. So we're talking to Travis Wernette. You want to find his website, find his book. It's thedreamingwell.com. That's the title of his book. You're listening to Way of the Dreamers. Robert Moss will be back right after the break.
Robert Moss has a collection of books, audio, video, and DVD products that will help you bring the creative and healing gift of dreams into your everyday life. Revitalize your work and relationships and journey to the furthest reaches of your imagination. These books are tools that everyone can use to begin or enhance active dreaming in their lives. Visit mossdreams.com. That's mossdreams.com. MOSSDREAMS.com.
Since ancient times, indigenous people from every culture have used their dreams to help interpret their lives, the world around them, and the future. Now you can tap into this indigenous wisdom with Robert Moss's workshops and classes, all designed to help you learn more about you and your connection to the dream world. If you are interested in finding out about how to host a class or workshop in your area, email Robert at robert@mossdreams.com. Or to find out about Robert's ongoing schedule of classes and workshops offered worldwide, visit his website, mossdreams.com.
You're listening to HealthyLife.net, the radio network that brings positive talk with positive change to make your world a little better.
Okay, you're listening to Way of the Dream with Robert Moss. You're having great fun with Travis Wernette, author of The Dreaming Well, musician, dream worker, passionate about dreaming with the earth. Travis, if you have a dream report or something like that for me, I want to invite you to share it, and we'll have a little bit of fun, I hope, working the simple process of sharing I call the lightning dream work, and later on I'll give you a dream and you can work it over any way you like. How's that sound?
That sounds delicious, my friend. Yeah.
Okay, you got something for me?
I do. This particular dream, as I was imagining being together with you on the phone today, this particular dream came through. I call it, you can't close the Bohemian natural foods market.
Okay.
So in the dream, I'm in a place that I lived in waking life in the past called Occidental, and I'm at what was my favorite natural food store. And there's a young woman working there, and she's pulling things down, and I intuit in the dream that they're closing the market. And I say, you can't close this place. It's just too fantastic. What's going on here? And the young woman says, well, you know, we're getting ready to close it down. And I say, well, I used to live in Occidental, and I really loved it, and I don't think that's such a good idea. By the way, I say to this young woman, how old are you? And I'm thinking that she's probably about 20 years old. But she says, I'm 15. And I think to myself in a dream, aha, the age where a person begins to sort of rebel and revolt against the structures that they've grown up with. And I know somehow that she's a dyed-in-the-wool, born and bred Occidentalian, a person from Occidental. And at this point, the dream shifts. She assumes lotus position, and she goes down into a clear water river, and she goes down about 10 feet. And I go up and begin to levitate over the river, and I'm thinking to myself, aha, this will be great, because she'll come out of the water, and she'll see me, and she'll say, oh, my God, you can levitate. But then I realize, as time passes in the dream, this is a mistake. What I really need to do, I should have gone down into the water with her. And as I have this realization, a man appears who is her father, and he looks to me to be goofy. He's got short black hair combed to the side. He's wearing a kind of blue polyester golf shirt. And I suddenly understand that he's the person who's in charge of the renovation project of the Bohemian market. So it turns out that they're not actually closing the place. They're renovating it. They're remodeling it. And the end of the dream is he pulls a shirt of mine, a denim shirt, which is very much like a shirt that my father would have worn when he was alive, one of those kind of Levi's cowboy blue denim shirts. He pulls it up out of the ground, and he says, this is the perfect thing for the construction project. And I say, hey, that's my shirt. I don't want it to be part of the construction project. And anyways, who put it there? And I have the thought that my partner probably put it in the ground, and that's how this man has found it. And that is the end of the dream.
The interesting dream. What are your feelings coming out of the dream?
Well, I feel in part, I had this dream while we were moving, and we were hauling a 15-foot U-Haul truck, and behind it, my partner's 10-foot-tall steel unicorn sculpture, and then all the fixings of our rabbit farm were on this trailer. And the dream came while I was sleeping in Reno with my partner, and we got up to leave.
Wow.
And so I'm thinking, because Occidental was a place that I loved dearly, and where a lot of this as we've already said in our conversation, a lot of this depth in my life began, and the sense of being claimed by a place really came for me at that time. I'm thinking because I'm moving that it has something to do with the renovation of this market. You know, things
right.
are changing.
Tavis, you're talking eloquently about what you're thinking, but I asked you, what did you feel? What did you feel coming out of the dream?
Oh, right,
feeling.
Right. Right, okay. Well, I guess a feeling of frustration and surprise and also a little bit of excitement.
Yes, okay. All right, that makes sense. Well, you've come inside of the reality check. The second question we ask is always, what do you recognize this in your life? So you recognize this is coming literally the time of transition. You're even in the truck with the unicorn in the back and the rabbits and all of that. So what about this Bohemian natural food store? Is it still operating? Is it possible that it will close or be renovated? Is that what's going on with that?
Well, I suppose it's possible that it would be renovated. I can't see it closing because it was a really successful spot there in Occidental.
And the girl and her father, are they familiar to you in any way?
No, they're not people that I would recognize from waking life.
And the shirt you do recognize, the denim shirt.
Yeah, that's kind of the only element in the dream that I, apart from the fact that I know this location to be the Bohemian Market, but the shirt is the most recognizable item.
And do you make a habit of levitating?
In dreams, apparently. I'm still working out how to
do that. Could any of this dream, you told us we discussed your big wave dream in relation to your father, could any part of this dream play out in the future literally or symbolically? I mean, could you run into a situation in which, you know, something precious to you is changing and you don't understand to begin with? Could you run into a girl who reminds you of this girl and run into the kind of choice that you find yourself making? Could any elements of the dream play out in some way in your future life?
Yeah, I could see that. I could certainly see the individuals in the dream somehow appearing at some point. And also the river, because now I live in river country.
Yeah.
And the shirt, which also reminds me of my father.
Yes.
All of these elements could appear in waking life.
So, if you have a particular question about the dream at this point, what is that question?
My question would be, what is the dream instructing me about how to refashion my own life in Colorado?
Right. Well, I home in, because we talked about your father early in your relationship, I home in very much on the shirt and your association with the shirt. So if it's my dream, I know that something that has been buried and left in a certain place is now being disinterred and is available to me. And maybe this is my father's legacy in connection to Colorado, which might be far more even than I realized up to this point. I mean, I find that element very important and actually very moving. So I want to make sure that I'm carrying, in a good sense, what should not be left buried in an old situation as I make this transit to, in a sense, my father's country. I'm very interested in the relationship with the girl. Yes, I can levitate. Yes, I'm Superman, etc. But maybe the challenge for me in life is to get down into the depths of that water. I feel clarity and cleanness there, too. Maybe as you began to feel, as you described it in your dream, maybe I want to, okay, I can levitate. Yep, I can do that. But maybe sometimes I need to put myself into a different mode and be willing to go into the depths, into the flow, into the stream, with something here that is young and maybe not fully formed, maybe itself in transition, that could reflect a part of me, and we can go Jungian and talk about the anima. But I just accept this beautiful, I see her as a beautiful young girl in the stream, as an invitation to me to go into the flow and remember to do that and not rely simply upon the powers and attributes that I've maybe celebrated up to this point. I'm reassured that a place that I like in the old town that I love is not closing down. I'm leaving, but things are not closing down. And in some sense, everything that Occidental represents to me and everything that Bohemian, the word alone is great, and natural food represents is still available to me. I still have access, and that gives me great assurance. Is there anything that you need to do that you haven't done already to honor the dream?
Well, I do have some shirts that are similar to the shirt that appears in the dream, and I'm actually wearing one today in honor of the dream and in honor of our interview. would be a helpful thing, to wear the shirt, to remind me of the dream and the energy of the dream.
That's great, Travis. So you're right on it, aren't you? You're wearing the shirt right now. That's terrific. You know, I like to get people to take action from their dreams. I'm not satisfied with analysis or amplification. I mean, that's all fun. But what are you going to do? What are you going to do to bring it into embodied life? And putting on the right shirt might be the best and simplest thing you can do. If you don't have the shirt, it might be an occasion for shamanic shopping. But you've got the shirt, so you're good. That's terrific. All right, we're talking to Travis Gwinnett. You can visit his website at thedreamingworld.com. We'll come back in a moment, and I'll offer him a little dream from last night, and he can work it over any way that he likes. You listen to Way of the Dreamer with Robert Mouse.
Robert Moss has a collection of books, audio, video, and DVD products that will help you bring the creative and healing gift of dreams into your everyday life. Revitalize your work and relationships and journey to the furthest reaches of your imagination. These books are tools that everyone can use to begin or enhance active dreaming in their lives. Visit mossdreams.com. That's mossdreams.com. MOSSDREAMS.com.
Since ancient times, indigenous people from every culture have used their dreams to help interpret their lives, the world around them, and the future. Now you can tap into this indigenous wisdom with Robert Moss's workshops and classes, all designed to help you learn more about you and your connection to the dream world. If you're interested in finding out about how to host a class or workshop in your area, email Robert at robert@mossdreams.com. Or to find out about Robert's ongoing schedule of classes and workshops offered worldwide, visit his website, mossdreams.com.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
You're listening to Way of the Dream with Robert Mouse. Our guest, a wonderful guest, is Travis Gwinnett. His book is The Dreaming World. Speaking of books, my own new book, Mysterious Realities, subtitle A Dream Traveler's Tales from the Imaginal Realm, is coming out soon. You can go ahead and pre-order from the usual suspects if you like. All right, I won't play author on my own behalf anymore for now, though you might find that I'm going to do that later. I must mention one other thing before we run out of time. I'm about to launch a new 24-class advanced training online for the Shift Network called Quantum Dreaming, where we'll marry models from quantum physics, the idea of a conscious participatory universe that physics is telling us about, to our techniques of shamanic dreaming and imaginal healing. All right, Travis, I'm going to give you a very short dream report from last night, and you're welcome to work it any way that you like.
Okay.
Ready?
Yes.
Okay, so the title is, and it's a funny word, Flying to Tambalesia. Tambalesia. I wrote down the word in the midst of the night, so I wouldn't lose it. Tambalesia, odd word. So I'm going on a long-haul flight, and it's an old-fashioned plane. It's like those older than you. You may not even remember them. One of those wide-bodied, comfortable planes with a passenger lounge and gracious flight attendants. I mean, elegant travel. And as in the old flights, it's making refueling stops, and we're flying somewhere out across the Pacific. We make a couple of stops, and the stop where I get off the plane, because we've got an overhaul stop, I know the name of the place. It is this odd word, Tambalesia. And it's a very pleasant island with a nice village. I like the art and artifacts. I'm looking at ceramics with brightly painted tropical flowers and birds and considering what to take home as a souvenir. I'm walking with people by the water and looking at the beach, and I meet a beautiful woman in a red dress, and we have a happy moment together. And basically, I come out of the dream, but I don't want to come out of the dream. I'm having such a good time, and it's very hot where I live physically at the moment. So I'm enjoying being in this island, Pacific island of Tambalesia. And basically, that's all that I'm going to share with you.
very good. Excuse me. Well, if this were my dream, one of the things that I would consider is that the very word Pacific itself refers to, if I'm not mistaken, the word means gentle or pleasing or pleasurable. And when I imagine this dream for myself, that's the experience that I have. It's all very pleasurable. I have an enjoyable time. And, you know, I don't, as a matter of fact, I don't want to leave the dream when I wake up. What, Robert, what would you like to know about the dream as the dreamer of the dream?
Well, I was very curious about the word. I mean, we have different styles of dreaming and different ways of working with them. I'm someone who accepts research assignments. If I've got a funny word, I will ask Auntie Google and anybody else I can think of and run it down. And to my surprise, I found there was a word very like it, and it's the name of an island in the Philippines. It's Tambalisa. It's a small island in the Philippines. And it exists, and I've been trying to find photographs of it to compare it with my dream. The photographs are not conclusive, and there's a picture of a beach park on Tambalisa in the Philippines that looks a bit like a scene. I'm not altogether sure, but I was curious to know where I had gone. I mean, it felt like a physical place because my senses were all alive. You've had dreams like that, too. It felt like a sense of like a... I'm also curious about the period of the dream because I'm in the kind of plane, on the kind of airplane trip that we really don't make anymore, all these refueling stops and the sheer luxury and comfort of the plane. So I was curious to know whether my dreaming self, my traveling self, went to an actual place that could be found on a map. And I was very surprised, Travis, to find that it is on a map. I mean, it is quite possibly this tiny island in the Philippines I had never heard of. I've never been to the Philippines, have no intention of going to the Philippines. But, you know, it looks as if I might have gone there.
Yeah, that I think that's fantastic, and that's one of the things that I've learned from you is to actually look things up like that. Let me offer you a musician's perspective, because the word Tambalisa, it reminds me of tambourine or tambra, something like that, a musical word. And also the second word reminds me of the word Lisa, and I'm now living with my sister, whose name is Lisa. So I would be curious to know what is the meaning of Tamba, T-A-M-B-A, and also what is the meaning of the name, the origin of the name Lisa, and I would wonder if that might hold some meaning for me as well. But just on the sheer basis of the sound of the word Tamba or tambourine, there's a rhythm to it, there's a percussion to it, and I would think that one of the things that this dream is coming to tell me is that there's something old and pleasurable that wants to enter my life, that is asking me to enter it, and to just sort of give into the flow, the sense of flight around that, and also the sense of grounding that I get when I realize that Tambalisa or Tambalisia is actually a real place in the Philippine Islands. I would think about how I could bring that into my experience at the moment and sort of knit together the present moment with the past.
I really like that, Travis, and maybe, although I wasn't asking for dream before our interview, maybe in the sense, the rhythm, the music, the movement, essential phonics of Tambalisa does play into our conversation. Because as you say that, I mean, I almost sort of want to get up and start sashaying around. I mean, there is a kind of sensual musical quality to it. And maybe that's as important or even more important than finding the island in the Philippines. And what you say about the mood of the dream and the invitation of the dream locale is very true. I mean, I've been working hard in really terrible heat by my standards, maybe not as bad as your heat on the high plateau in Colorado, but terrible heat. It's very difficult. I was just so comfortable in this island retreat in my dream. I wanted to stay there. And you brought out that quality of the dream very well, which makes me think that sometimes our dreams give us a vacation, which we're not allowing ourselves otherwise.
Right. Well, fantastic. Is there anything else that I can offer around the dream at this point, Robert?
I enjoyed what you said, and I really enjoyed being keyed into the music of the word. I was starting to lose that with my excitement about finding that there's a place on a map that actually corresponds. There is music, there is beauty and rhythm in the word, so maybe I want to stir the beauty and rhythm, and maybe I want to be open as an action plan for spending more dream vacation time in places like this. I mean, I don't have to pay for the plane tickets, do I? As a matter of fact, I probably couldn't get on this plane. I actually suspect, Travis, just to add to the conversation a little bit about the short dream report, I think it's also, from my point of view, an example of time travel in dreams or travel to an alternate reality, because I think my traveling self You know, I remember being on planes like this when I was first traveling from Australia to Europe. You know, we don't have planes like this anymore. So there's a time travel aspect as well. So I'm just celebratory in my mind, and you've helped me in the celebration, thank you, about how much we can do in our dreams takes us beyond the ordinary situation. All right, we need to pause for another break, then we're basically back with Travis Winnett to say thank you and dream on. His website, again, is thedreamingwell.com. The title of his book is The Dreaming Well. It's a passionate book about what dreaming can be, and I think you'll enjoy it. And you'll enjoy the music. We heard about his relationship with the Didge. I would have loved to talk to Travis more about other forms of music, including the kind of chanting and other sonics that he writes about. Anyway, you're listening to Way of the Dream with Robert Moss. We'll be back after the break.
Robert Moss has a collection of books, audio, video, and DVD products that will help you bring the creative and healing gift of dreams into your everyday life. Revitalize your work and relationships and journey to the furthest reaches of your imagination. These books are tools that everyone can use to begin or enhance active dreaming in their lives. Visit mossdreams.com. That's mossdreams.com. MOSSDREAMS.com.
Since ancient times, indigenous people from every culture have used their dreams to help interpret their lives, the world around them, and the future. Now you can tap into this indigenous wisdom with Robert Moss's workshops and classes, all designed to help you learn more about you and your connection to the dream world. If you're interested in finding out about how to host a class or workshop in your area, email Robert at robert@mossdreams.com. Or to find out about Robert's ongoing schedule of classes and workshops offered worldwide, visit his website, mossdreams.com.
You're listening to HealthyLife.net, the radio network that brings positive talk with positive change to make your world a little better.
Way of the Dream with Robert Moss. We've been talking to Travis Wernett, author of The Dreaming Well. What a wonderful guest you are, Travis. How you bring all of this alive. Do you have a last thought for us?
Sure. I guess the last thought that I would offer would be just to encourage the listeners and the other dreamers who are tuning in to be willing to consider being claimed by something. Maybe ask the question, you could ask yourself the question, what is it in my life that's seeking to claim me? We're so used to sort of the Western or North American way of getting in charge of things and making things go our own way. And I would just encourage you as a sort of main thought from the book to consider, what is it that might be seeking to claim you, and how could you...
I like that a lot. I'm going straight in again. The Aborigines say the big stories are hunting the right people to tell them or to live them, I would say. A similar thought. You and I both love stories, so that's a good idea. What is seeking to claim you? What is seeking to jump on you if it's the big story? Be bound by that story and everything will be different. All right. Thank you, Travis. Everybody, thank you for joining us. And from now until next time, may your best dreams come true. And may you remember them.